organization that support the struggle of this group of more than 150,000 workers that in Tijuana. They are workers in factories that are called maquiladoras. And so it's important to have the perspective of this size of the border. After Andrea Benjamin presented the conditions here, if we go to the south of the border only less than 1 mile, we could understand the relationship between what is happening here and what is happening there. So also this organization, so it's called the CITAC, Centro de Información para Trabajadoras y Trabajadores, the Information Center for Working Women and Men. And I belong to a group that locally in San Diego support these people, together with Kristen, that also she's here with us in the presentation. This organization essentially provides several services to workers, since unions, in fact, are illegal for these workers in Tijuana. So the group like CITAC are really important because they are, in fact, the only space that these workers, mainly females, have to try to resist some of the most abusive practices that these companies have in Tijuana. For example, this is a workshop of the organization discussing several issues. Here you have the workers of one of the factories that they are having mapping factory production. This way they could understand a little better the relationship between their work, the profits of the company, and also the diseases and illness that they suffer working in every day in the factory. Also, this organization has some political action. For example, every International Workers' Day, the organization takes the streets and try to make conscience about the invisible situation that these workers are living a daily life in Tijuana. Just mentioning that here the border is a real tough reality, so we have more than 140,000 workers in these factories, and if we remember that, as Benjamin mentioned, more than 75,000 people cross the border every day from Tijuana to San Diego to work in the gardens, in the hospital, in the daily centers, in different areas here in San Diego. You could understand that actually Tijuana is a city that mainly is designed to serve the capital and the necessities of California, especially San Diego. Most of these maquiladora factories, about 700 of them, are actually from the U.S., many of them are from California. Just briefly, a maquiladora simply is a factory that is created under the Maquiladora Program for Investment that essentially allows U.S. And later on corporations from other countries to establish in Mexico with 100% of foreign investment, and they have a special treatment. Essentially, they have to pay only a reduced part of the taxes that if you are a Mexican company, you have to pay nearly to 20 or 30% of taxes. If you are a maquiladora, you have to pay less than 5% of taxes. No? So this TACNA is a broker that he promotes U.S. investors to open maquiladoras, to close factories in the U.S., and to open the same facility in Tijuana, promoting that they guarantee you low-cost production. For that reason, the maquiladoras in Tijuana have grown really a lot. So you have in the beginning of the program in the 60s and to the present, to the time, you could see the exponential growing of the industry in Tijuana. In Tijuana, it's produced everything from televisions to Barbies, no? And now the most growing important sector is the medical. For example, Cardinal Health and many other medical corporations, they are opening a lot of maquiladoras. They are now a cluster in Tijuana, and they are they produce many instruments, especially to administrate some kind of medicine to patients, the automatic machines and all the hoses and everything, you know? So you see the workers every day going to the factory, dressing like if they were physicians going to a surgery, because they the company wants to be sure that the product is going to be pure for the consumption in the U.S. Sony is the biggest maquiladora in Tijuana with more than 9,000 workers just right there, no? So here is the reason why the maquiladoras essentially are growing in Tijuana. The same factory in San Diego will need to pay about $11 per hour, while in Tijuana, actually, the salary will be about $1 per hour. So this fact we need to modify, because in the last 3 weeks, the Mexican peso, after the U.S. recession, has devalued at least 40%. So that means essentially that this number is still lower. And according to some brokers, and this fact actually is pretty accurate according to some scholars, if you open a factory in Tijuana or in Mexico coming from the U.S., you save more than $20,000 per worker. And if you multiply for thousands of workers that you have, you could imagine that this is a very good business to go in Tijuana. Tijuana actually is the city where more televisions are produced in the world. It's the television capital of the world, no? So many chances that this one that we are using here and the television that you have at home are produced in Tijuana. Maquiladoras in Mexico now, after the North American Free Trade Agreement was signed by the three countries, the maquiladoras grow really a lot. Before, they were a reduced part of the economy. Now they are the center of the economy. And Mexico is becoming a maquiladora country. Originally, only in the border you could open these factories. And still you could see that in the border is where most of the maquiladoras are located. But however, now they are spreading all around Mexico and Central America. And because after NAFTA, as a foreign company, you are allowed to open maquiladoras any part in Mexico. Obviously, the border is still the central place where the maquiladoras exist. So Tijuana has had a crazy growing in the last 40 years. So you could see that the population, the growth of the population, essentially without any kind of infrastructure. Well, basically, the maquiladoras, as I told you, pay almost no taxes at all. So the government of the cities like Tijuana or Ciudad Juárez, they don't have the resources, even if they wanted to produce something that infrastructure accurate for housing, etc., services for the mostly immigrants. Because something that is important is that many maquiladora workers, most of them are actually not from the border, not from Tijuana, but they are from Central Mexico, Southern Mexico, and South America, and many of them come to the border thinking to cross the border to the U.S. So you have a lot of crossing between workers in factories, undocumented workers in the U.S., particularly in San Diego, some of them who are deported to Tijuana, some of them that are just waiting the opportunity to go to the U.S. So there is a lot of, it's the same population actually, just divided by this, in some ways, invisible border, no? In other ways, very awful, big border, as Benjamin mentioned before. So with the city, in addition, you know, the government of Tijuana is especially known for the level of corruption that the government has. So it's not exactly, even with the resources that they have, that they will be used in a good way, no? So as a result of that, these are very conservative facts, no? But essentially, 2/3 of the houses in Tijuana, they don't have water. The only way to get a water is through a truck with a very defective water going to your neighborhood. Most of the streets are not paved. The level of poverty, and I am here conservative. I am more with the fact that Benjamin is mentioning, especially in the last year, but we could say officially the poverty is at least 60%. And as you could see, the recession in the last month has made the devaluation of the peso 40%. And since the economy of Mexico and the U.S. are so linked, that when you have this devaluation 40%, that means almost automatically that the living standard of the people are going to reduce in the same proportion. So you could imagine what is the abuse of the human rights. Here we have a case of a worker that she is a worker that for many years worked in this Cigarro Light. This company together with Sola are two of the major companies in Tijuana that produce glasses. Sola is part of the big corporation that originally was from Australia, now is from Germany, and they are proud that they invented this seeing glass lenses that we are now used for to see. And according to them, one of four lenses that we use for, and they are produced by them. So there are many chances that your glasses are actually coming from there. She's my friend, and also she's, it's really sad to announce that her 11-year, very active, nice, cute boy died just recently, no? And we don't know exactly how he died, but the medical explanation that she received was that the boy died because his lungs were dried out, no? So, mysteriously, in this company, not only this boy, no, that he obviously doesn't work in the factory because he's young, even though you have people like 16 or 15 years working in the factories, he was not working there, but her mother probably brought a lot of chemical substance that this one that you have here to home. As a result of that, he died. Otherwise, it's not easy to explain why at least other three workers in this factory actually have died after working in Sigarmo Light, and the explanation that they receive is exactly the same. The lungs dry out. One of the workers have some kind of mysterious treatment in the factory and checking in the factory without any explanation to her what happened after this medical examination. The only fact is that she was essentially pushed to resign, and weeks before she resigned, she died because the lungs were dry out. This factory is a small factory. It's really crowded. It's like a warehouse without proper ventilation, without proper system of illumination, because actually even to produce the glasses in this very modern technique, you can't have this light. It has to be like a really low, something blue. But when you enter to the factory, all the factory is like a blue, like if you were in a disco, something like that. Very small, really, really small, and it smells like, you don't, actually, if you're going to apply to work in this factory, they give you a tour to the factory before hiring you. So you enter to the factory, and if you are able to go through the factory and to return to the door without throwing up, you get the application to try to because of the company has certification, internationally has one of these ISO certifications that says that it's very safe and healthy factory. When inspectors of the Mexican Tijuana government go to check what are the health conditions, they don't even enter to the factory because they smell it, excuse me, no? But just from the door, they just sign the paper saying it's okay, and they left, no? When the workers complain, the factory say, I'm absolutely following the patterns. I am not violating any yes, of course, they are not violating any rule. For example, the workers are using this chemical substance in some kind of containers. This substance is really dangerous. To the temperature, regular temperature could explode or produce a big fire. It has to be really cold. Anyway, make a lot of smoke, and the workers are working with this smoke for 8 hours. When they leave the factory, all the clothes, the skin is impregnated with the smelling, and they are smelling this substance, and they use it without any protection. The only protection that they have is a little tips for the fingers, just for the top of the fingers, because when a drop going to your skin left some kind of color that is essentially impossible to take it out, no? It's permanent, so it's not hurting, but it's really something that you cannot to clean up, no? So, and they are using as if that was water, no? Like a water, and they don't know what they are using because the container doesn't have the label. The label is in the big containers in the warehouse in the factory where the engineers made the chemical cocktail that the workers are going to use. The only reason that we have this one is because one of the workers stole the brand and brought to the organization, and in this way we learned that this material can produce cancer, and the workers are using like that. In addition, in this factory is one of the factories where the administration reminds me a lot of what happened in the prison to the immigrants detained. For example, one occasion, one worker left one of the when you are woman are in the in your period, you use one of these toilets, no, special for when you have blood, no. So one of the workers left in the floor in the restroom. The manager was so mad, and the factory had the tradition to treat the workers, verbal abuse them. That the workers always complain about that. So the manager, a male manager, organized a meeting with all the female workers and ordered one of the supervisors in there to check worker by worker to see who were in the period and to claim that they were responsible for this thing that was happening. At the same time, saying really nasty things in the way that he was talking to them. And in addition to that, they produced these glasses for us. But in order to have a perfect glasses, they had to check the glasses in a big magnifier. Behind the magnifier, you have a fluorescent lamp. So you are checking glass by glass per hours. After 8 hours, your eyes are crying, no? And after months, essentially, your sight is really deteriorated, no? Because of this work is what we could see better using the glasses that we are using here, no? Cigarmolite is an example. Perhaps it's a very violation of the human and labor rights of the workers are concentrated there. But if you talk with the workers, you will realize that in one way or another, essentially, something like that happened in most of the maquiladoras, at least in most of the maquiladoras that we have contact with in Tijuana. Did you have another case of a worker that, Alicia, she was forced to work in a very shaky machine that was really old, folding these boxes for that they are going to be the packet for the televisions. So she didn't want to work there, but she was forced to do it, so she was in this shaky place. She was working with the boxes, and she fell down, no? When she fell down, she broke off her column, and she became paraplegic for life, no? The reaction of the company was to fire her, no? So that, and even the company said that she intentionally jumped because she wanted to commit suicide, no? It was the explanation of the company, if you could believe it. It's because of Zitac entered in contact with her that the organization pushed the Mexican government, and now she received some kind of compensation for life to this, get this compensation because of the situation in the world. But anyway, the money that she receives in any way compensate what is happening to her, because now, I mean, she has all these children, no? So, and essentially she's not capable to take care of them at all, no? Finally, you have another case that is a factory called Metales y Derivados, that the owner of this factory work in the recycling batteries business. According to the maquiladora program, when you open a maquiladora, all the garbage that you produce, you have to return it to the country that your maquiladora is coming from. But this guy, the owner of this factory from San Diego, for him was easy just to left all the lead that he take out of the batteries and put in the ground, just there, no? And accumulated, when this was a big hill of lead, he just opened, well, his workers opened big holes, and they just full it of tons of lead, and as a result of that, essentially, his maquiladora became a real health hazard to the communities around the area. When the Mexican government, after pressure of the community, realized the problem, the owner of the maquiladora simply crossed the border and went to live in San Diego to keep his business in San Diego. He has profits, what he sells of more than $1 million per year, and he left all this material behind in Tijuana. As a result of that, so you have levels of lead near to the neighborhood that is close to this factory of more than 3,000 times. No, all the kids in the community around are affected by lead. And the community, together with an organization in San Diego, the Environmental Health Coalition, year they organized a campaign that essentially forced the Mexican government to clean up the area. That was really expensive, but after many years of struggle, they finally forced the Mexican government, and just recently, in the last months, all the lead was removed, and the area now remains safe because of the mobilization of the people there. Anyway, so what you are going to have is that the pollution coming from this factory and other factories go to this little river near to the, that is called the Alamar River. From the Alamar River, the pollution goes directly to the Tijuana River estuary, and from here, all the pollution goes to the Pacific Ocean. From the Pacific Ocean, well, you don't have control where the pollution goes. According to some scholars, the pollution of lead produced by this factory and others in Tijuana could be found even in far north places in Alaska because of the migration of the whales that go from Alaska to Baja California every year. They bring their pollution with them, their bodies, to the north. No? So something that we could say is that these maquiladora workers actually are fighting a similar struggle to the immigrant workers in the U.S., no? For a Mexican worker, it's a matter to be oppressed by the immigrant in the U.S. or by the Mexican police in the Mexican side, especially now with all the violence happening in Tijuana. And so we understand that it's impossible to actually to organize and to fight something in the South without linking with what is happening in the North, no? So we have the same free trade policies in the two countries that actually are responsible for violating the right of the people to stay at home. I mean, it's not only that it's a violation of the migration right, but also now you don't have the right to stay in your home with your kids, with your family, because the economic system that essentially make you to be out of the business in your little store in the countryside, in you were a family working for generations in the fields, now you can't do it anymore, no? So you are pushed to migrate, and you ended working in one of these maquiladoras or in one of these detention centers in the U.S. So this group of maquiladora workers have relation with the social movements in Mexico, for example, the social movement of the Zapatistas in Mexico. And then, so I just want to finish saying that as a country and as a city, we are divided, but also we are united by the border, no? So for good or for bad, the destinies of the two sides of the border are linked, and we really need to try to get this more multinational perspective to try to get a solution. As a group in San Diego, the San Diego Maquiladora Workers Solidarity Network, we organized tours to Tijuana where people from the U.S. could see firsthand what is happening there and to try to have a direct connection between the problems in the South and the problems in the North through these kind of activities. Thank you very much.
Thank all of our panelists, and thank you for attending our session. We do have about 10 minutes left, so we'd like to welcome any questions for any of the panelists at this time. Yes. Under whose jurisdiction do the maquiladoras fall?
The maquiladora program is a federal program, no? So essentially, there are several federal institutions who have to control what is happening in the maquiladoras. In terms of health and labor conditions and environment, there are two national agencies, something that is called the equivalent to the Environmental Protection Agency in Mexico, the PROFEPA, that they have to check what is happening in the factories, and they have local offices. Offices, for example, in Tijuana, they have an office that supposedly has to check the how is the pollution produced by maquiladora regulated in the factories. But they have, I mean, really like a 5 or 6 people working for more than 700 maquiladoras, and mainly with a very bureaucratic mentality, and they essentially do zero, as in the case of Cigar Molite. The other agency is the something that is called the labor department. I'm actually, the Mexican labor law is very progressive and could, if applied, would request the companies to provide a good standards of living and labor condition to the workers. Unfortunately, this agency, in addition to be very inefficient, is sort of very in favor of companies, in this case of the maquiladoras. The maquiladoras have a lot of political power in Tijuana. Tijuana is sort of the maquiladora kingdom, no? So essentially, this institution is not willing and capable to challenge any of the practices of the maquiladoras. Like this guy, I mean, the owner of this factory, Metales y Derivados, he has a warrant. Well, he had, because he died, no? But he had a warrant to by the Mexican police. But in any way, the Tijuana government wanted to try to really enforce and to try to get some kind of agreement with the San Diego police and to arrest the guy and to bring to Mexico, no? Why not? Because they were afraid that that example would scare other maquiladora investors and they wouldn't want to open new factories in Tijuana.
And the second question is relating to pediatric populations.
The children are less than 5% here in the area, in the region, less than 5% of the detained population, and they're detained in separate facilities that are not run by CCA. They're contracted out to faith agencies that help run those detention facilities. They're much more humane. But if there's an overcrowding in those facilities, then in the past they have put young children into the juvenile detention center, and that's something we're always concerned about.
What is the age cutoff going into the child versus juvenile? Or is it?
Well, it's they would take the oldest kids and put them in juvenile if that were the case. It's not that they're not supposed to. They're absolutely not supposed to put them in juvenile, but at times they have and said, oh, well, we didn't have enough space in these other facilities. But they're supposed to try to get these kids out of detention and locate them with a relative or some responsible adult who can ensure their appearance in court if they can. But since 9/11, we're seeing the Department of Homeland Security release people less and less. You can be cynical and say it's because somebody's making a lot of money off of those detainees. Or you can use the argument that they use, which is the national security argument. All these people are terrorists, so on and so forth. And that's why we're having to detain them. But we know that when you use other forms of assurances to get people to court, like bonds or in certain instances bracelets or anklets, that those are very effective at getting people to court, especially when they have the possibility of winning their case. It's in their best interest to appear in court.
Another question in the back.
I'm not hiding the alarm.
going to, because the session is being recorded, and I'm sure that your comments didn't make them to the mic. I just want to just say that the speaker from the audience has said that he really appreciated this session, and we should have more sessions like it. So, for the record, yes.
Maquiladoras are foreign. I don't know exactly you. What was your
question? Right, but like, for instance, say United, a company, a U.S.-based company, are they responsible at all for the conditions that occur, whether it's abuse or being some type of health issue? Are they responsible for what goes on in the bathroom? Or is it just the Mexico that is responsible for regulating the bathroom?
This is, I mean, it's a little difficult to make a distinction of the responsibilities here, no? I mean, the Mexican government is responsible for allowing these companies to violate the Mexican laws in so open way. But the foreign companies also are responsible for really pushing the Mexican government and corrupting the Mexican government to allow these things happen, no? So you should imagine that these companies are not like very naive going to this territory. They are very active in terms of politics, in terms of our relationship with the government, and when they invest, they know what is happening there, and they actually want to be sure that when they invest, the conditions that are agreed with the Mexican government will be respected and enforced in the field. No? So it's some kind of common responsibility from the maquiladora companies and the Mexican government.
We have time for just one more question, and I want to encourage everyone to go to the rally after this, so I don't want to hold people too long, but yes.
Curious what you all think about how to build a movement. You know, I mean, how do what are your suggestions?
I see that there are other hands. Unfortunately, our time is up, so I want to be able to release people that have other commitments and sessions to go to, as well as the rally. But anyone who wants to stick around and stay for a few moments to carry on the conversation, hopefully the panelists can stay, and we invite you to come forward and maybe have a bit of a more informal conversation. So thanks very much for coming and for your participation.